This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is sponsored by the Education and Outreach Team for the Messenger Mission to Planet Mercury. Follow the mission as the spacecraft helps to unlock the secrets of the inner solar system at www.messenger-education.org.
It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, coming in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and I am reporting from NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C. This is the site of a press conference on the Messenger mission to planet Mercury, and they're going to make a big announcement here, or several announcements. There's a few scientists that are reporting, and it's being reported in Science Magazine today. This is Thursday, November 29th. So we're going to go and see what it's all about.
Dark, and spectroscopically we know that they are covered by this dark complex organic mix of materials. This material, we believe, therefore, is also
Sean Solomon, the project lead on the Messenger mission to planet Mercury, has announced the discovery of water ice and a dark material thought to be volatile organic compounds associated with the water on Mercury, up in the craters near the polar regions, in this case the North Polar regions. So seeing if the reflective patches that telescopes have already seen at Mercury's poles, seeing if those are water was one of the questions Messenger was originally sent to answer. So the water isn't a huge surprise, but the organics sure are. And right now David Page from UCLA is talking about those volatile organics. He mentioned that they may be the same sort of material that gave rise to life on Earth. And these mercury deposits could be the only place where those original materials exist, certainly the only planet. So once the presentations are over, I'm going to try to talk with the scientists directly.
What would be a good answer? First, can you say your name and title? So
David Lawrence, senior scientist at APO.
Okay, and what was your role in finding these water involvements?
I did the data analysis for the neutron spectrometer, which measures hydrogen concentrations at Mercury's North Pole.
Okay, and as I understand it, you're using basically something that's already there, cosmic radiation.
Cosmic rays, yeah.
Flies all over the place. And luckily, when it hits a hydrogen atom, it is something that you can notice, that you can see, or you can notice the lack.
Notice the lack of neutrons is the signature of lots of hydrogen. Yeah.
So if it's not there, then hydrogen is there.
Correct.
Okay. And knowing that hydrogen is there, how do you know there's water there?
Well, that's an inference. And for this measurement, we can measure how much hydrogen matches what we would expect if you filled these radar bright regions with water ice. And when the two match up quantitatively, it's a pretty sure match that the hydrogen that you measure is in the form of water ice. And then you put all the other information together, the radar data, the temperature, the MLA, they're all pointing towards water ice.
Okay, and just for a lay audience, is there any way to explain why hydrogen is the one that stopped? I mean, why not boron? Why not anything else?
Yes, it's basically billiard balls. Think of billiard balls as being hydrogen and protons, and think of bowling balls as being all the other atoms. So let's say you have a room full of bowling balls, and you have a billiard ball in your hand, and you toss it in the room. Get out of the way, it'll knock you in the head. It's bouncing back very fast. But if you take the cue ball and hit it dead on with a billiard ball, it dies very quickly. It loses what it is, the technical term, it loses its momentum it has very good momentum transfer because of the same mass.
And the cosmic rays are like...
And cosmic rays are protons. And, well, they do. They break apart all the neutrons from the atomic nuclei, and they're just bouncing around like billiard balls bouncing around bowling balls. Mm-hmm. And occasionally when you find hydrogen atoms, they die. They lose their energy very quickly. It's really that simple.
You can say your name and title.
I'm Gregory Newman at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center, and I'm an MLA instrument scientist and a geophysicist.
Okay. And?
I'm David Page. I'm a professor of planetary science at UCLA, and I'm a messenger participating scientist.
And how deep do you think the water is?
Several meters. But the altimeter could tell you if it were more than that, because we would see, and we have not yet seen, traces of iceberg processes. That is, the surface doesn't seem to have been, you know, built up.
And this was a surprise. I was expecting the water, but what about volatiles? And how did you find those? Because that was a
surprise. Well, I wasn't expecting those, but we started seeing them immediately. As soon as we went into orbit. And it was Dave who told us, hey, I have an idea.
What was your idea and why?
Well, we know two things about this stuff. It's really dark, like about the same reflectance as coal, and also that it tends to disappear once you get it too hot, like about boiling point of water. And the only material in the solar system that we know that fits those two descriptions is this dark organic material that we find covering comets and also other icy bodies in the outer solar system.
And isn't it crazy that I was shocked that you find the brightest stuff and the darkest stuff, and those are, you know, the most interesting and the most detectable. It just seems there's so much, I don't know, serendipity about it.
And to just see this ice that we've been hypothesizing about just right there in the data, it's like, whoa, you know, that's really exciting.
It's almost better than, I mean, most people say, oh, you know something or see it by looking at it. But you guys are actually making models and then seeing it, every model lay on top of every other model perfectly or close to perfectly.
Yeah.
And that's almost like more exciting and more convincing.
Right, right. It's, we see it and understand it, which is doubly good.
Here's Sean Solomon. He's the principal investigator and lead scientist on the MESSENGER. Hey, congratulations. You got a minute?
Okay.
So why is it especially both interesting and illuminating to find this on Mercury? I mean, we know there's water all over the solar system, especially way out in the furthest reaches. Why is it particularly interesting to and perhaps instructive to find it on Mercury?
The reason is that Mercury has an ability to store this material that is no doubt delivered to all the other inner planets. But Mercury has these very stable cold freezers at the North and South Pole. If you delivered volatiles to the Earth, it would just be a drop in the ocean. If you delivered volatiles to Mars or Venus, the event would pretty soon be lost to all of the more dynamic geological and atmospheric processes that happen on those two bodies. But Mercury has these cold recorders of the arrival of volatile materials and gives us, therefore, a window into the time scale, into the spatial scale for delivery of water, delivery of organic material, delivery of other volatile materials to bodies for which that record is lost. And the fact that we see it on the planet closest to the sun is astounding enough. But the fact that it also informs our ability to work out the history of volatile delivery on Earth and Mars and Venus is very special.
People hear organics, they hear water, they think life. And I know you're not expecting to find life there, but you said that it does tell you something, perhaps, about the origins of life in the solar system.
There are many steps between the delivery of simple molecules and the emergence of life on the Earth. And most of those steps are completely lost from the geological and the biological record. We can only speculate, we can do laboratory experiments, we can look at meteorites, we can search for the possibility of organic materials on Mars, as the Mars Science Laboratory Curiosity is doing now. But Mercury gives us another lever arm on these early steps in the assembly of the building blocks of life. And Mercury probably also saw some early organic chemistry. In the case of Mercury, it was driven by the radiation and thermal environment of the planet closest to the sun. But it still gives us clues into what kinds of organic materials might have been assembled in a planetary setting once the basic building blocks had been delivered.
And does it it confirm ideas that you only up to now could have just surmised? I mean, does it tell you something that you can't learn from other phenomena that might be observable?
Well, what's different? I mean, it suggests that material from the outer solar system has been delivered to the inner solar system and gathered up by the inner planets. And we had reason to believe that has been the case, and we can go out with spacecraft to the outer solar system and look at what materials are there. But to have a direct handle from Mercury on the end product of that delivery at one of the most extreme environments in the inner solar system, I think gives us an anchor to a lot of ideas for how much material has been delivered in that manner, how rapidly that material has been delivered over time, over the history of the solar system. So it's a very important new set of observations that gives us a constraint from a part of the solar system where we have no record before.
Great. All right, thanks. So that about wraps it up from here at NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C. For the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, I'm Bob Hirshon.
This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy was sponsored by Clear Skies Observing Guides, a modern-day celestial handbook, www.clearskies.eu. Clear Skies Observing Guides, or CSOG, is a new concept in visual amateur astronomy. The observing guides contain thousands of objects to observe through amateur telescopes, with matching tours for go-to telescopes and matching astroplanar plan files. CSOG allows you to target deep sky objects and carbon stars you never observed before, night after night. Wishing astronomers around the world clear skies.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. Cool.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.